Hello and welcome to the Digital Freethought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LP FM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is Sunday, February 21st, 2021. I'm Larry Rhodes, or Doubter 5, and as usual, we have our co-host Wombat on the line with us. Hello, Wombat.
Well, it's been 1 week, because I've been in this house for 1 week.
One week, because all the snow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you'll be able to get out next week. Our guests today are Doubtfire, Boudreaux, and Buffalo. Hello, all.
Hello, hello.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. Conversely, we also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist, free-thinking, and rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and we'll be telling you how you can connect with them right after the mid-show break. Also, did you know that there was a streaming atheist call-in TV show broadcasting here in Knoxville and has been for 10 years? Did you know that, Wombat?
Yeah, but if they have a hyperbolic time chamber that lets them train as much as they want in 24 hours, why don't they just always use it?
Always be on the line? Always be training?
Yeah.
That's not our show, but we always are online because the archives are on YouTube. Anybody can go to YouTube and find Knoxville Atheist or Knoxville Free Thought videos. Wombat, what's our topic for today?
We're actually going to have Scott lead the topic, but I think we're going to be asking the question of, do your beliefs match your actions? But before we get into the main show, I really like to have just a quick, super fast, super, super neat, super, 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 like, trimmed section of how everyone's life is doing in the next 30 seconds. We'll start with Scott. How you been for the last 30 seconds, your whole life story? Can you wrap it up?
Oh, come on, man.
We got time. Come on.
Had a debate last week.
Yeah, how that debate
went really well. Yeah, it went pretty good. I didn't perform as well as I wanted because I was kind of not prepared for my interlocutor's lack of knowledge, I guess, on the topic we were talking about. So it was kind of hard to navigate that situation, but that went okay. It went
well.
What
was the format? Did you have
you'll have to check it out.
I mean, when you say debate, I'm thinking two people at a podium and a moderator. Or were you, was it more conversational? How'd it go?
Yeah, it was structured. So it was opening, rebuttal, counter. Then it was open discussion. Then it went into closing statements. And it was on the Empathetic Atheist YouTube channel. So check that out.
Okay.
Yeah. So we did that. And then, yeah, everything's been going great this week. You know,
everything's been going great this week. That's great. That's great to hear. You're in Trump country. You should be fine. You should be fine over there.
Yeah, I'm wonderful.
Boudreaux, how you doing? Looking spiffy.
I'm well. I had a good week. We are fine. The snow and things are getting better. So I'm pleased that we're on the down of that. I did something fun and tracked all the walks, runs and ellipticals that I've done since the lockdown, and put it in some graphs and put it on Facebook. It was kind of fun. Nice. 875 miles, 875 walks. Wow. Amazingly. Yeah. Neat. So it was fun. And yeah, we walked a lot. And I suspect George is going to share some, Buffalo is going to share some news about what his daughter did this week.
Shoot, let's throw it to George.
Yeah.
George, since George isn't on, I guess you're George now.
Which daughter?
The one I married.
Okay.
You remember?
She was pretty excited about giving a presentation to, I guess it was a Zoom presentation that included where somehow, I don't know the details, but it was based at Cornell. And it was on her her business, her specialty, and that is regulation of the pet food industry.
Okay.
And she argued she was very pleased to have done that with the particular audience, a lot of people from the FDA and so forth. But I think it's much more significant that she's a past president of the national organization of regulators of the pet food industry. And that I think is, and she's done that. She had a stint on that for a couple of years. That's real work, you know, just give a talk, talk is one thing, but get down there and doing the putting in the hours is quite another. But anyway, that was great to hear about. She was very excited about it.
Yeah, I mean, we love
it. And then today we're going to get together and watch the U.S. women's soccer team. The She Believes tournament is going on, and we're going to be playing the Brazilians, who are a very tough team. So that's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun to watch.
It's two national teams, or do they have names?
Two national teams.
I see. Yeah. I see. So it's USA versus Brazil.
Right.
Cool. Nice. All right, who are you cheering for?
Yeah, I had trouble last week when USA played Canada. I was torn on who I should cheer for.
Sure. I know, right?
Just kidding.
They all came. They were so polite. What are you going to do? Larry, how you been holding up?
I'm doing well. Just staying safe. I'm 70, so I don't really have to get out that much. Playing a lot of computer games and watching some TV.
Nice. What's the new TV channel du jour?
Oh, we just got through watching The Mandalorian, the series.
Oh,
nice. It was pretty good.
It was pretty good, he said. Yeah.
A few things. I'm a science fiction nut or geek. So, I mean, two guys can't put together a space-worthy spaceship in a couple of days, which is one of the things that supposedly happened with no external help and no external tools. Just won't happen.
Yeah, biting my tongue here, but this is way, way in the past. So who knows what kind of technology they had back then? Who knows?
That's true.
Right.
Yeah, it was all Lego blocks.
It's all snap.
You just need crystals and Lego pieces. That's it. Mm-hmm. All right. So I've been trapped in the snow, like I said. We had that blizzard come down. Last Friday, everything looked pretty clean and sunny and bright. That was like a really nice picture. And then this dark cloud came in the evening. And we woke up Saturday more or less in what I would say like a quasi blizzard, except it was just hail. And it was constant hail for like 26 hours. Tiny little pieces of ice built up and stacked and froze together into solid chunks. And so when we went, by the time it was Sunday and we got up, we're like, I can't get out of the parking lot. Like, my car is literally encased in an igloo. And so like work was just shut down. All the roads were blocked. Sanitation workers couldn't come out. Gas stations were shut down because no one could go to attend them. Like, Walmart shut down for a period of time. There was like nothing for anybody. Everyone just stayed home. Thankfully, we did some, I guess what you would call emergency shopping beforehand, before the storm hit, because we heard so much from New York. But it is a crazy thing. Weather is crazy. And it's not just, you know, weather. It's obviously getting more extreme. Like, the winters are getting more cold, summers are getting more hot. And I'm glad that we have at least the perspective of having administration that's willing to recognize the problem for what it is and roll up your sleeves, not fix the problem, or at least start fixing the problem, recognize that there is a problem there.
Right.
Question, right. Ty.
Hey,
talk to me. Did you lose a lot of trees? Did this ice do a lot of damage to the trees?
So not in my local area. No, I have not seen any tree loss, though I have not left my block in the last 7 days. So I don't really know what the rest of the world looks like right now.
we got quite a bit of ice on the trees as well. But I think the saving was this year was unlike 2009, is there was no wind.
So
there wasn't as much power loss, at least in our general central Kentucky area. Sure. And there wasn't so much damage to the trees. It's not going to be so messy afterward, in other words.
Good. I will tell you this one thing. I almost went ice skating. That's how bad it was. Like, there's a very, very shallow lake right outside my window. And I said, you know what? I know this lake isn't deep. I know it had water beforehand. I know I won't fall like a meter or whatever in the water or anything like that. I got the ice skates right here and I can't rollerblade. And I've been rollerblading like all this year. I'm like, let me just put them on and go out there. And I was like, no, don't do it. It's not worth it. Because one, I'm older now. And two, I realize when I go out rollerblading, I'm wearing the helmet. I got the wrist guards. I got the knee pads. I'm wearing like a whole bunch of PPE and I fall all the time. Ice skating, there's just this convention of, yeah, you don't wear PPE. You just go out there, and if you fall, you fall. I'm like, ice is way harder than pavement. What are you doing? So, did not do that. Not worth getting the injury. I will keep to rollerblading. Anyway, Scott, that was quick.
Let's take a break, everyone.
Like I said, super quick.
I show.
I already had a topic for us today. Well, it was something about like our actions don't match our beliefs. What's that all about?
Yeah. So the question is, does our actions really match our beliefs? And there's a lot of folks in the field of psychology that would say that they don't. Like there's a PhD, Leslie Becker Phelps, who did a piece on this in Psychology Today, writes a book and things of that nature, and talks about how the evidence kind of shows that people talk about what they believe as an afterthought to their actions. And sometimes people wind up not acting on what they say they believe because of that very reason, that, you know, they don't really act on their beliefs at all. People say they believe what they act on, but then sometimes they don't really believe that deep inside. Like, for example, I had that debate on free will last week.
Yeah.
So I'm one of these people that don't believe in libertarian free will. Yet every day I act as though I do. Like every day I'm making choices and I feel like I'm free, and I've, in my language, you know, reflects that, you know, that I have freedom and things of that nature, that I have free choices. And it's kind of good that I do. The science even says that people who make the story and they kind of believe and reinforce the idea of free choice end up being more causative in their, you know, behaviors and things like that. And it's just weird semantics, and it's really hard for people to grasp that subject, for example, because it's so intuitive, you know. And so we make stories that sort of line up with our behaviors, and sometimes that's not the case at all. So another example that you could say is that, you know, let's say if you pay attention to your thoughts, let's say if you're having a problem with your boss at work, and you may think that your boss sees you as stupid and you feel like it's true. But say if you were to really think about it and reflect on the praise that she gave you at different times, you may realize that this thought does not really make a whole lot of sense. And in circumstances like this, it can help remind yourself, just because it feels true doesn't make it true. But even in that process of thinking and kind of understanding, yeah, she probably doesn't think I'm stupid, I'm probably blowing out of perspective, you can be easily triggered by that same person, because this thought is just ruminating so much. It's becoming a habit to where you just act on every little criticism that person gives you, because you have this idea that, you know, she thinks you're stupid, even though you know different. So it's just one of those weird things. I think that this is kind of interesting. And then the question is, how can we use that to help ourselves, you know?
So just to condense the thoughts so far, I'm thinking like our feelings can be very subjective and oftentimes even confusing things, even for the person who's experiencing them, such that the actions that are born from those emotions may not even be in line with those emotions. And so the question would be like, are our emotions in line with our beliefs? Are our beliefs in line with our actions? And like, what's really controlling what? Like, where does the circle begin and where does it terminate at? It clearly terminates at like maybe an action, but is that motivated by a set of like morals or beliefs that we say we have? Or are they more guttural emotions that we're just operating on at the moment, and we're retroactively making it seem like it's a belief after the fact?
That's right. That's what I'm saying. It's like, for me, it took, like when I left Jehovah's Witnesses, for example, when I had beliefs that, or feelings that the Jehovah's Witnesses were true, and then those beliefs became just out of my intellectual wheelhouse. But there was something always making me act a certain way, because I had scrupulosity. You know, I was so concerned about, you know, having God's approval and my behaviors and things like that. It was a hard habit to shake. And so my actions didn't really reflect my true beliefs at that point. You know, I had dropped all those beliefs, but yet I was still kind of worried about, you know, not living forever and all these promises that I had kind of made part of my identity in my thoughts, you know.
Okay. So I think like the real question is like, are we, our actions more strongly informed by a belief that we have, or are they strongly motivated by our emotions? Maybe we can ask that around, right? Buffalo, what do you think? Do you think it's fair to say that your actions are more motivated by your beliefs than your emotions? Can someone actually be that belief oriented?
I don't know. I think sometimes our desire for creature comforts interferes with where the difference between the beliefs and the actions. And then there's a balance of whether or not our desire and need for creature comforts, whatever they are, whether they're social acceptability or they are indeed, you know, physical comforts, that interferes and you end up somewhere in between.
Mm. Yeah. I can definitely see like an equilibrium there, right? Maybe it's not entirely one thing. Do you see yourself as more belief oriented or more emotion oriented in terms of informing your actions?
Definitely, I'm not belief oriented because I don't really believe in anything. I conclude. So that was an easy one for me.
Okay. Boudreaux, I'm going to throw this out at you. Do you find yourself more motivated by your beliefs or do you find yourself more motivated by your emotions? And how do you parse the two?
And for argument's sake, we can replace belief with conclusions here to satisfy.
Yeah. I'm not touching that. Right.
I don't know. I guess I dare say none of us probably really pay attention to this level, you know, unless you're really, really meditating on it. But I'd like to think I'm more belief based and less emotion based, but I definitely feel like if there are things I'm passionate about, that kind of feels like it's an emotional belief that probably goes on the other side. I do find that actually I've got a fun list of things that I often, you know, kind of clash with people on. I kind of probably fall into the emotional category there, try to back it up with facts. So I don't know. So yeah, I don't know. Probably a mix, maybe favoring the belief side.
I can tell you where I can conclude. I can say my emotion driven actions are way more fun than my belief driven actions, almost 10 out of 10 times. And so if it's something serious, I'll try to operate on beliefs, but if it's for my own recreational benefit, I'm going to go on emotional. I'll do whatever I want emotional wise.
That's
as far as free will, as you guys are defining it for this conversation, allow. I will be motivated by that. Larry, what do you think? Are you more emotion driven, belief driven? How do you separate?
Well, I'd say that most people are a mix of both, obviously. What comes in the problem is that, the hypocrisy of a lot of believers, you know, they'll say something like that God can see everything and knows everything, but then you'll find out that some preacher has cheated on his wife or has hired a homosexual prostitute. You know, does he think that God no longer sees it, or does he not believe that God sees all this stuff?
Yeah.
You know, that's what gets me. They're not acting as if their beliefs are true. But they're telling everybody else what to believe based on, you know, their professed beliefs.
Good example of that, of Mother Teresa. Mm-hmm. Do you want to touch on that? You know, the Mother Teresa hypocrisy, Larry?
Or should I? There's a whole book on it.
Yeah.
Christopher Hitchens put out a book. What was the title of that one? Does anybody know?
Escapes me.
She professed. Theoretically, taking care of all these poor people in Calcutta and India. But it turns out that what she was doing was just taking them in, putting them on a cheap mat, and laying them on the floor by the dozens and hundreds, and just allowing them to suffer. And in her own words, suffering is next to godliness. It was what Jesus did for us. So let them suffer is basically what she did. But then she went all around the world gathering money right. to take care of these people and right. and working on the stated assumption that she was literally helping them to get that money. That's hypocrisy.
And then she got sick. And uh-huh. what did, and did she
went to get the best medical attention she could find, no matter what it cost.
And we don't have to go all the way back in the past. We've had Trump, for example, say, hey, you know, you don't have to worry about the coronavirus. Like, have you tried, I don't know, maybe injecting bleach into your system? Is there a light ray or a flashlight we can get to kill these viruses? Mm-hmm. I have coronavirus. I started a rally that gave everyone coronavirus. Well, give me the good stuff.
Yeah.
All right, great.
Yeah, I got the bleach.
Yeah. Give me the good stuff. And then he comes back and he takes off his face mask, and then people just keep taking off their face masks. It's just like, what are you doing?
And don't forget about Tom Cruise in Cancun.
I like Tom Cruise. I like the Tom Cruise approach.
And that book, by the way, is called The Missionary Position. Mother Teresa, in theory.
That's a great name for a book.
Yeah.
But I'm Mother Teresa, not that I know that much about her. She did spend her entire life interacting with those poor people and giving some of them hope or something.
In the time and that she wasn't money raising, you mean?
No, she was money raising, but she generated an army of other like thinking people that went into the slums and took care of those people.
Take care of them or gather them up and put them on the floor and just let them suffer.
Yeah,
there's a big difference there.
They did feed them. I don't know where they fed them, but you know, they subjected themselves to disease and I'm sure a lot of awful smells to give some of these people some hope. And I don't know whether that's right or wrong, but I think it's kind of it's a complex sort of issue. And then her confessions at the end that she doubted God in the end were, I think, very interesting. And those letters that she didn't want to be published until. Well, she didn't want them to be published.
Yeah.
If I can make an analogy, I've once had a really bad ulcer that I had to go to the doctor to repair. And instead of giving me a pep talk that made me feel really hopeful and like a sandwich to feed me and like a nice mat to lie down on, he gave me a prescription that actually helped me get rid of the ulcer. And I would say 10 out of 10 times, if you put yourself in position or inhibit someone from getting in position to get meaningful standard of help and care, you're not helping. Right. And even if you give me a really nice pep talk and a nice sandwich and you feed me and I smell bad and you're around me, that's not helping me get actual help. We should have standards for help and standards for help that actually reduce my harm, the harm that I'm doing to myself or harm that's going on in the community, are always going to be better than just a pat on the back. And I when I look at the Mother Teresa story, I just see lip service at the highest tier. It looks great. It feels great. But it does nothing. It's crackers. You're just eating and getting no nutritional value. And so it's up to us to have a better standard for that. Boudreaux, what do you think?
This kind of ties in another thing that's been talked about quite a bit that I think is worth bringing into this conversation. Thoughts and prayers.
Yeah. You know
what I mean? How about the smallest possible effort that I could give to your cause? And, you know, especially on a Facebook post or something like that, it's like, you know, my family's all sick and we're out of food you know, someone just died. Thoughts and prayers. Hey, let me set up a, right.
Lip service. Lip service, you say you're going to help and don't.
True.
But with
true.
Thoughts and prayers, you just don't.
But the numbers involved here are important, aren't they? And it's just like problems in population. The greater the numbers, the more complex the solutions. And go ahead.
I actually have a bone to pick with praying, because I actually think we know scientifically now that actually makes the situation worse. There have been studies done on blind groups. Larry, do you want to take that?
Well, it was I don't know who did the survey, but it was done on
MIT did one.
Who?
MIT did one.
Okay.
MIT did
one. It was on heart patients before and after surgery. They were doing separate groups that knew that they were going to be prayed for before they went into surgery, people that knew that they weren't going to be prayed for before they went into surgery, and a blind group that blind study group that wasn't told one way or the other. And they found out that the group that had the most complications was the group that knew that they were going to be prayed for before they went into surgery. Because when they came out, apparently they had more anxiety to be able to, I mean, to be better. Right. And that led to other complications after they came out of surgery.
So, yeah. So in a lot of ways, thoughts and prayers are something maybe even worse.
Right.
Right.
Don't tell me you're going to pray for me.
Yeah. Don't give me your thoughts and prayers, please. Yeah. Ignore me if anything. Jeez. Yeah.
Well, I had an interesting experience, and that is I had a 5X bypass surgery about 3 years ago. And afterwards, I wasn't feeling very well, of course, and my family was there. And the a minister came in to come and give the prayers and so forth. Wow. And I was really annoyed, but I was stuck sort of in a social situation where you can't complain, even though in every respect I wanted to complain. But here's the thing. That was very useful, or very useless, I should say, interaction. And it still annoys me to this day. I was being prayed for. I didn't want to be prayed for. I didn't want to have the social pressure of sitting there and being silent while I was being prayed for. But nevertheless, he was there. What's that?
You couldn't talk? You were like prone and unable to speak? Okay. I could talk,
but I'm not going to embarrass my family because they're more on the religious side. So there was a tremendous social pressure to just sit there being uncomfortable and keep my mouth shut.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, I would not be the first to say this, but, you know, a lot of ministry leverages on the fact that it's socially expected for you to do what they're telling you to do, because
keep your mouth shut, stay in the pews and keep your mouth shut. Right.
Yeah. They have,
because what's the harm, right? What's the harm?
Yeah. Like, what, you don't believe in this? Cause everybody else believes in this. It's the emperor's new clothes, pressure system. Anyway, we got 2 minutes. I want to hear something cool. I want to know a cool emotional, belief that we have. I know for me, I am willing to argue that Pokemon generation number one is the best generation of all time. I'm not willing to hear anything else. There's a reason why Charizard cards are selling for like $300,000 right now, and nobody knows what a Totodile is. It's the best generation, best art style, best set of 151 Pokemon. Bujo, I think you got Star Wars. I don't want to load your card, but like, what would you be your go-to emotional? Don't care about beliefs. This is about emotion. Let's fight.
I got a list of like a dozen here, but I'll give you one. I think saying it's worth a shot. It was worth a shot is a meaningless statement. Yeah, you know, you go somewhere. You go 15 minutes on your way to see if you can get like a closer parking spot or a better deal, and then you don't get it, and then you come back. Well, it was worth a shot. No, it wasn't worth a shot. You know the outcome. It's no longer worth a shot. It's a no.
It's a no. Buffalo, do you have anything where you just like gut reaction, have like a belief, you know, is not absolutely rational, but you just enjoy it anyway?
I can't come up with it, anything at the moment, but I would respond to Eric's comment.
Sure.
And I would say, you know, it really annoys that annoys the hell out of me when I'm riding with somebody and they do that. The parking lot, the parking lot analogy. And again, you can't do anything about it, really. You can spoil maybe the next 15 minutes of the interaction by saying something, but it also drives me crazy that why not just look around you and see how many people are being successful at this and see that it's most often not successful, and then just behave that way.
If only everybody tried to do that, that'd be great. We'd have a much better society. We would evolve as a culture. Scott, I'm going to throw this out at you. What's a fun pet peeve that's entirely emotionally based that you enjoy having?
Well, I don't know. Well, I guess I enjoy it a little bit, but I feel like, you know, this positive thinking thing, like, I don't think that positive thinking works. I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not 100% on it. Like, I could say like, well, I'm going to be really positive today and I'm going to go to the gym. And this time I'm going to bench, you know, this amount of weight or whatever the case is. And I just have to get my mind right and go in there and do it. And I go in there and it's like 50-50. Sometimes I'm achieving my goals. Sometimes I've fallen short, but I don't think positive. So in that case, it seems like the evidence seems to me that the positive thinking thing has nothing to do with it. Ooh, that's just kind of an illusion, you know, like it's just to make me feel better about motivating me to do something, but I don't know.
We're going to touch that next half of the episode. Larry, what's your pet peeve? And then take us out.
I got nothing. I don't know.
I know you got pet peeves. No, I've been around you long enough. I know that's just the host and Larry talking because he sees the clicking time clock. Mm. But Larry, go on ahead and take us out.
Okay. This has been the first half of the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour and WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. And we'll be right back after this short break.
Hi, I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective association of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate, just like our founding fathers intended. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Welcome to the second half of the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Doubter 5, and we're here on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is Sunday, February 21st, 2020. Let's talk about the atheist and free thought groups that you can find right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville, or ASK. We were founded in 2002. We're going on our 19th year now. ASK has over 1,000 members, and we have a weekly Zoom meeting during COVID where we can all get together and talk about anything we want to. You can find us online at Facebook or at KnoxvilleAtheist.org. You can also find us on Meetup or just by Googling Knoxville Atheist. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one.
Start one.
That's right. Earlier in the show, we said we'd talk about the Atheist television or a video show. Well, they were on television for about 10 years until last year when they switched over to online services. You can find all of their work or their archives on YouTube. Just search for Knoxville Free Thought and you'll be able to pull up their archives. With us on our show today are Wombat, a regular co-host. We have Boudreaux and Doubtfire and George.
Buffalo George.
Buffalo, there you go. And what were we talking about today? Where are we going with this?
Yeah, we're going over necessary supplies if you are locked in your house for over a week. And I'm going to tell you, you need to be able to get, first of all, a lot of ice. You'll need a shovel, and then you'll need a fan. What a fan, what a fan, what a fan, what a mighty good fan.
What a mighty good fan.
Guys, we're going over listener feedback from last episode. I'm going to highlight two comments so that we can get right back into the thick of things. Dada's Trading Room, all the way from Hungary. I think he's in America, though. He says, if the universe... Actually, I think he's Polish. My bad, Dada. If the universe were fine-tuned for us, or even created for us, shouldn't we, humans, be around since the beginning of the universe?
Yeah, and we're kind of Johnny come latelys, aren't we?
Yeah. We, in the grand scheme of things, we are kind of late to the party if this party was thrown for us. Mm-hmm. It'd be the equivalent of like doing a New Year's party in May. We're showing up in May for a New Year's party. It's like, hey, showing up, guys. What's up? By the way, these are comments from our last episode last week, which was the universe is trying to kill us. And I thought the comment to Dada's Training Room's comment was actually pretty good. It was, well, if the universe was fine-tuned for us or even created for us, shouldn't humans be around forever? And so I thought two really good thought exercises for the fine-tuning argument. Like, this universe was created for us. It's meant for us. Not only are we showing up late to its existence, not only does it seem like most places would kill us in this universe itself, but if it's fine-tuned for us, why aren't we better suited to exist in different kinds of areas in it, and why can't we be around it forever? Why are we put into this place with an expiration date?
Well, it's not only us. I mean, even if we were to stick around forever, the sun won't be here for but for another 5 billion years.
We
know a lot about stars, and the sun is a star. We know it's going to run out of fuel in about 5 billion years. It's going to expand so much that our orbit, the orbit of the Earth, will be inside the sun. It'll expand that much in 5 billion years. So even if we're around, it would be an awfully hot place.
Yeah. Let me throw something else at too. The ocean water, the water that hit Earth in a comet form most likely, did not have as much salt in it as it does now. The reason why it does have as much salt as it does now is because it's picked up from water streams, rivers, mountains, etc., and it collects, and then it recycles and pours more water. I'm sorry, pours more salt and sediment and ions of that sort in that collection pool that we call the ocean. Mm-hmm. It gets progressively more saltier. So there's a period of, there will be a point before even the sun burns out where it's just, this water ain't good anymore. We need to get some new water over here. We got to
be like the Dead Sea.
Yeah. Basically. So we have to, if anything, we have to do what we can do now for future generations to be able to preserve the quality of life that we have. We're not preserving the Earth, because the Earth will be here whether we're here or not, but we can make it a better experience for humans down the road if we are willing to take some responsibility today. And that's what we got to do. Hey, positive thinking by Mr. Guy who doesn't believe free will is an actual thing. So I want to dissect this a little bit. You're saying, hey, when I have a positive mindset, I sometimes and sometimes don't find the motivation to do the work that I'm tasked with doing. And that makes me think that there is a disconnect between positive thinking and motivation, such that I can't force myself to get motivated, or I can't push a button and be instantly motivated. And that makes me think that positive thinking in its own right may not actually be a thing that's worthwhile in the first place. Have you tried the opposite? Have you thought negatively going into the gym thinking, I can't bench press anything today. I'm going to feel terrible today. And then actually find the motivation to overcome that. You're on mute, my friend.
Yes, actually, yesterday I was in the gym. And what happened was, this is why this is on my mind. Because Thursday I went to work out. And I had all this positive energy and positive thinking. So I'm going to go in there and I'm going to do it. And I'm going to make it happen. And I'm going to blah, 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 blah. And I got there and I failed. And I just gave up. And I was like, man, I'm just not feeling it. I'm out of here. Like, I just ran away from it, you know, and I felt terrible. So I woke up yesterday. I was like, well, I've got to work out, but I feel terrible. It based on the memory of Thursday, I'm just really starting to really be bad at this. And I went in there and I kind of drugged myself in and start lifting weights. And I realized, wait a minute, I feel a lot stronger than I did Thursday. And I started getting into it and I was having fun with it. And so it just kind of dawned on me that all this positive thinking, negative thinking thing may just be kind of an illusory thing.
Hmm.
And based on everything because I did a lot of research about the free will stuff and some of the science behind it. And so it all started kind of coming together. Like, I think these guys, these scientist people, they really know their stuff. Maybe maybe they're onto something.
I always get triggered when someone says these scientist people say something, not the science says something.
No, I know.
I'm going to pull a page out of George's book. George, let me know if this is compatible with maybe logic that we might share. I think everyone's a bell curve. Generally, like, there's enough of a distribution of people where you might find that one thing works for most people, but on the fringes, not as well. And maybe positive thinking works for the bulk sample of people. And even there, maybe it's an equilibrium. Maybe it's more inclined to work with a certain group within that certain proportion. But as you get towards the longer fringes, you're going to need something else other than positive thinking, or maybe something entirely different as you get towards the outliers to get someone to feel motivated, because we are inherently different and unique animals. What do you think, George? Does that seem reasonable?
Yeah, it does, because I think almost everything is on a bell-shaped curve. So, yeah, it fits. Again, I think each one of us is so different, both inside and outside, that one would almost expect it. I would almost expect it.
How do you get yourself motivated? How do you get your actions to make sure you believe you're motivated? How do you get
an interesting question. I think maybe more sort of constant inner drives worked for me rather than wake up in the morning and have a thought about doing something. Although I do that, I sometimes wake up and decide I'm going to take on a certain task and I'll go and do it. Mm. But I don't really think about whether or not it's going to be successful because I'm an experimentalist and I know that 75% of experiments usually fail. But you got to keep...
Only 75? What field of science are you in? That's why you've got so many citations.
But my strong feeling is, you know, you got to keep going. You may not be successful today, but you'll be successful tomorrow as long as you keep at it.
Sure. Wisdom from Buffalo. Larry, what do you think? I'm going to phrase this question slightly differently for you, but is there validity in positive thinking towards getting yourself motivated? And if not, how do you personally get yourself motivated?
No, I think there is. It may be not to the extent that most people tout it, but I think that it gearing yourself up mentally for a task is halfway through the task. It really does. Not only because you're expecting the test to be a certain way, and generally if you meet it and it is that way, then you have that much of it done. I think that a lot of anything that you do, and my work was programming, so if I have a really good mindset about what I'm going to try to accomplish before I go in to do it, it helps me get through and helps me get done quicker. If it's a physical task, I think it still sets you up for what you're going to be expected doing it. But whether or not that particular day it works for you physically or not is something else.
Okay. Boudreaux, throwing that out at you. Comments?
I think maybe piggyback on what Larry's saying. I mean, I don't know that we can simplify the topic to work for just anything, working out, this or that. But imagine it has a strong influence of positive thinking will really help on certain things, you know, where you have a big influence on it, your subconscious has an influence on it, whereas positive thinking is not really going to do you much good for playing the lottery, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure, the outcome is beyond your control.
Right. So I think the topic is important.
It might help you accept the results.
The context is very
It's true.
Now, that is actually a really good point, because when you go to a casino, for example, those places are specifically engineered to keep your bad thoughts at the back of your head and the happy, bright, colorful, sonorific GCF, bright pitches, bright colors, those thoughts in the front of your face at all times, and the promise of, hey man, just one more pull of that, you know, lever.
Yeah. You got a free buffet there. You don't think about the $100 you drop when you, in the hour you were there.
Would you like a free drink, sir? Like all that stuff in a casino, it's specifically engineered. If you go to a church, very much engineered without you maybe even realizing it. These are places that are designed for you to not be able to hide behind desks. You're sitting in a pew, open chairs, kind of uncomfortable. You're standing up, you're sitting down. You're standing up, you're sitting down at very specific intervals. The songs aren't very intricate. Those songs books.
If they are, they're classical in nature.
Yeah. We'll just say stimulating in the way to keep you placid. They aren't meant to like raise your heartbeat dramatically, but they are meant to keep you in that good frame of mind so that when the tithe bell or bowl or hat comes around, you're like, maybe I will give $5 more today, because literally everyone in this line gave $5 and now everyone's looking at me. It's all engineered for you. You should be aware of that. Hey, Scott, what do you got?
Hey, I was just thinking just now when you guys were mentioning that about making a like how can we use our feelings to our benefit, right? And it just dawned on him. I remember I was speaking. I don't know if I mentioned this before, but I used to work with a Zen Buddhist person. And we have all, we used to have all these kind of conversations all the time. So, you know, in Buddhism, they believe that there is no free will, there is no self and all of this kind of stuff, right? So we were having this conversation and he told me a story. He said, the thing about it is there's a side of your consciousness, the unconscious or the subconscious, that's way stronger than your executive functioning mind, is what he was telling me. He's like, you know, your awareness, you know, your this illusory part of your mind, your brain, is very weak. It's really not composite of what's really going on. With most of the hard lifting is done in your subconscious mind. And he says, so there's this story, I think, in Zen Buddhism, where he says, it's kind of like the rider on the elephant. You know, there's a rider on the elephant that says, go to the left, and the elephant always goes to the right. And so every time he's telling the elephant to go somewhere, the elephant doesn't listen. But then, you know, he finally learned how to trick the elephant into going where he wants it to go, so that the elephant leads him where he wants to go. I forget exactly how the story goes, but it's basically that there's an elephant, the stronger part of you, which is your unconscious mind, and you have to create these habits and start recording this information into your unconscious so that it starts directing.
Paraphrase, you have to kind of,
because you'll never,
you have to have a relationship with yourself to improve yourself in a way.
Yeah. And it takes time. Like it takes, it's called forming hat. It's like forming good habits.
I would say
is what he's
telling. Put a capstone on the positive speaking topic. I think it's a form of pressure, because I think we are very responsive to social pressure, obviously. I mean, we can see that very clearly in society. And what we're doing when we're talking to ourselves to hype ourselves forward is kind of put this stakes on ourselves to perform in a way that we are expecting. We are either personifying our expectations or talking to ourselves as like a secondary agent, where it's like, hey, you can do this, you got to do this. And then I receive that same message and be like, okay, I can do this. I can do this. I'll keep running up, even though my body says stop, because I said go, I will keep doing the going. And so if you format it away from just like, hey, I'm just talking to myself and maybe that may not motivate me, maybe it's more of like, maybe I just don't respond well to pressure, social pressure. And that's a hit or miss for me. And I just need to find a better way to talk to my elephant or talk to myself in a way that's much more conducive towards getting the things that I need to get done. Larry, I'm going to throw something fun at you. We had a comment on YouTube. I know you wanted to talk about it. I can see it in your eyes. There's a glint in Larry's eye. Well, it did deal with faith. And you know what? How about we handle it? It's from Tom Stone. He responded on a video from far back ago. We were talking about faith. Tom Stone says, you keep looking for foolproof. If you are looking for foolproof, then you will fail. You can develop what I call educated faith through great study and human experiments. I'm reading this comment, just making sure, but an element of faith is required. When you develop full true faith, a connection with our mind becomes established and you can actually feel the divine presence. Divine is spelled with an E. It's all fine. And then deep meditation can also establish this connection. Good luck, tiny humans.
I mean, faith is, I mean, especially religious faith, is believing without evidence. And he's saying, once you do a lot of tests, it reinforces your faith. Well, that's right. Experimentation. That's science. And once you have a lot of experiments under your belt, if they're true testable results and not just you pointing to something saying that's God, then if you've got good verifiable results, then you've done experiment, you've done, you have everyday expectation of based on experience, which is what the dictionary would say one of the definitions of faith is. There, you know, the problem with a lot of religious people use faith one definition to mean something else. It's equivocation and it's a falsehood. So I would just recommend people go to the dictionary, look up all the different definitions of faith, and you'll see that the one that atheists use are the everyday expectation based on experience and not believing without evidence.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because even in the Bible, there's two definitions of faith that aren't compatible right. with mm-hmm. each other.
And that's what he's doing to some effect here.
Yeah.
But if you wanted to...
Go for it. Go for it, Bobo.
If you want to do a good experiment, you better do at least three controls. And that means asking the difficult questions as well as the easy questions.
Right. And if you're going to have an experiment, it can only run an experiment if it's falsifiable, which means you need to have a frame of reference for what it will look like if it's wrong, which means you have to be able to say, what would this look like if there was no God? What would this look like if faith didn't work? And you have to be honest with those
answers. Or if it was a different God.
Right. You can't say, well, I'll be dead, so I don't know either way. Like, no. That just means you have an unfalsifiable position, which I've heard many times. Larry, you got another comment as I'm going down here. 1 week ago, someone asked, is Larry a hologram? Now someone's asking,
No.
He's just a manifestation of the force, says 60
Gap. That's it. That's it. Manifestation of the green screen.
Scott, so we had a nice chat about, do our actions inform our beliefs? Are our emotions really what's informing our motivations? I'll leave one point and then love to hear your closing thoughts on the matter. I find boredom to be the thing that I will subconsciously try to avoid at all costs, even if it means I will do something that is painful or terrible to my system. I will do it to avoid boredom. And by terrible, I mean like watch Desperate Housewives or something like that. Just something where it's just like anything to keep me from not being bored. I'll turn on a TV while I try to go to sleep, like stuff like that, to just do terrible things to my system. But when I am working out, I have a really, really hard time listening to radio music, which is what they play in the gym, because radio music is very formulaic. And I hate it when it's like, and here comes the chorus. It's always country music, by the way. I live in Tennessee. It's always country music. So it's like, here's the chorus.
Oh, you live near Nashville.
So yeah. And here's the title of the song right after the chorus. The pains of whiskey. It's like, oh God, I don't want to listen to this song anymore. And it just kills all my motivation. So I go in there with my own earbuds and I'll play the same playlist of music that I've curated specifically just so I can be like, if I'm at this part of the song, I should be at the escalator or the treadmill. If I'm at this part of the song, I should be working my weights. And that works out so well, but even I'll get bored with that. So I have like a series of playlists for like different days. Some are randomized, some aren't. And that just helps to throw in variety just so I can avoid the boredom, because I realize that's what my elephant hates.
Achilles heel.
That's my Achilles heel. And I think what you're saying, like how you have to get to know yourself to be able to work with yourself better, absolutely true. I feel like there is that relationship. And a lot of people don't give themselves time to figure that out. And that's what I find the benefit for those who, you know, like more of the, I don't need a dogma, but I do like the spiritual benefits of connecting with myself. It's like, yeah, like I feel like meditation gives you a chance to listen to your inner monologue, all that stuff. And that's beneficial to you. Roundtable thoughts. Do you disagree? Buffalo, I'll throw it out at you. And then we can leave it up to Scott for closing. Do you think... There's validity in that. Meditation and all that stuff to get to know yourself better and help to control yourself in terms of at least getting a better handle on your motivations. Can you do that through self-thought, meditation? What do you think?
Well, I understand that some people can, but I can't. I'm too impatient. No, I mean, absolutely. I'm more worried about losing patience than I am being bored.
I'll argue this. You can meditate in other ways other than just sitting down. Like some people, for them, it's drawing. For some people, it's skiing. For some people, it's walking in cow patties on frozen ice.
Lost in thought.
Okay. All right. Yeah. The walking analogy is a good one because it is kind of meditating, because I look around at the woods and I think about things that I see and ask questions about why they are the way they are. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess in that way, I am meditating. I guess it just doesn't fit the normal definition of meditating.
Sure, I'll give you that.
But I can rotate out of that very quickly into something else. I think what motivates me is just if something's not working, then think about, find something that has more potential to work. and moved to that for a while.
Larry, we were talking about before about motivation, and now this is more of just a question of like, all right, so how do you get yourself motivated to get stuff done? And so for the things that you do like to do, whether it's writing or playing games,
I have a saying that has held me in good stead all of my life.
There are no souls?
No. That one too. But no, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, there was a saying, you know, you get into something. You know, I'm really into treadmill now, or I'm really into working out. And if there's something that you don't really want to do, but you have to do it anyway, my saying is, if you can't get out of it, get into it. So, you know, try to set your mind that it's fun, that it's going to be good for you, that, you know, the reward at the end, you know, try to make it something that you could get into.
I love that. I love that. I do have a saying myself on that. It's not as good as that, but it's more of like, that was so good. If I can't get out, I get into it. The time I enjoy wasting is not wasted time. And so for a lot of the hobbies that I do where I feel like I'm losing time, if I'm enjoying doing it and getting better at it, it's not wasted time.
I like that. That goes along with a Crosby, Stills, and Nash song. It says, maybe it was James Taylor. He said, there's so little time to do the things you want to do once you find them. Because it's really hard to find things as you grow up that and live your life that you really want to do. I mean, that really turn you on, the things that you're into. And then you don't have time to do them.
Okay. Larry, why don't you take us out? Or what are your final thoughts?
Okay. Well, I was just going to say that my own content can be found on digitalfreethought.com. The blog is there, the atheist songs, the articles on the subject of atheism is on digitalfreethought.com. Be sure to click on the blog button. My book is called Atheism, What's It All About? And it's available on Amazon. If you have any questions for the show, you can email them to us. Thank you, Ty. At askanatheist@knoxvilleatheist.org, and we'll answer my future shows. If you're having trouble mentally or whatever, emotionally, from leaving religious beliefs behind, you can find help at recoveringfromreligion.org. If you're watching this on YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe. This has been the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. Remember, everybody is going to somebody else's hell. The time to worry about it is when they prove that heavens and hells and souls are real. Until then, don't sweat it. Enjoy your life, and we'll see you next week. Say bye, everybody.
Awesome. Bye, everybody. Bye. Bye. Bye.